This is Gavin Shaw going solo with you on this Saturday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Today I'm going to be joined by Locked On Pelicans host Jake Madison. Jake also co-hosts Locked On NBA and has been covering the Pelicans for the better part of 9 years, so I thought he would be the perfect person to give us some insight on what Julius Randle and Elfrid Payton bring to the New York Knicks. It is worth noting that I blatantly stole this episode idea from our friend Jonathan Macri over at Knicks Film School, so I highly encourage you to check out his episode on a similar topic with Chris True, who is a longtime Pelicans podcaster, and they go over some similar stuff, but I tried to vary it up. Take some new angles with Jake. We talk about Julius Randle's game, the best way to maximize it, whether he could ever be a plus player as a primary scorer, what exactly he can improve on, how real his jump shot is, a lot of fun stuff there. And then we get into Elfrid Payton and a surprising skill you might not have known that he has. I certainly didn't. And finally, I finish up talking about the Pelicans because, at least in my mind, they're probably the most interesting team in the NBA next year after adding J.J. Redick around Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball. I just think there's a lot of different disparate elements there, but they're one of the few teams in the NBA that's almost never going to put a bad player on the floor, with the exception of maybe some of their rookies who I think are in time are going to be really good, which is just the antithesis of what they've been over the last couple of years. So that really fascinated me. Anyways, without further ado, let's get into it. Locked On Knicks with Jake Madison.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, counted at one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier.
The host of Locked On Pelicans and occasionally of Locked On NBA as well, Jake Madison. Jake, we really appreciate you joining the podcast and giving us the opportunity to sort of grill you on the two newest Knicks to come from you, your New Orleans Pelicans, Julius Randle and Elfrid Payton.
Yeah, happy to be on talking hoops with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And Julius Randle, obviously, I mean, for better or worse, mostly for worse, I think if you'd quiz Knicks fans, was the premier signing of the Knicks offseason. And obviously a lot of expectations are on his shoulders. I mean, just given the guys they were supposed to get and also just objectively, he sort of walks in from day one as the Knicks' best offensive player. So I'm going to just start off real broad and just sort of let you go off, Jake. What did you think of the Julius Randle experience overall?
You know, it was a mixed bag. Like, I wouldn't call it bad, but I wouldn't call it great. This is a guy who can score. He averaged over, 21 points per game last year. He's a pretty good rebounder. He can defend in isolation situations pretty well, though in team defense, not as much. But if you need a guy who can get you a bucket late in the game, he's certainly a guy who can do it. He's a bull. He's strong down low. He's got some pretty good athleticism. So seeing him kind of get the ball in his hands and go and do his thing and cook a little bit was pretty fun last year. He's got a bit of a three-point shot, too, so he can somewhat space the court. He shot over 34% from deep last year. He does a number of things well, and if you want to watch a guy who can get out and transition and run, he's your man. But this is a guy who does require the ball in his hands, sometimes isn't the most efficient guy, and he's kind of got that big man syndrome of, let me launch a bunch of threes because I think I'm hot tonight, which can sometimes be absolutely infuriating. And then overall, he probably still is a negative on the defense, even though in one-on-one situations, he's not too bad. And that just kind of leaves you with, a mixed bag of a player. He's fun. He's exciting. He's an engaging guy. Can he be your best player on a team? Probably not. That means you're probably not going very far. So it was kind of just, like I said, mixed results with him last year.
How did you feel about moving on from him? And I guess, once the Pelicans got the number one pick in the draft and were set to take Zion Williamson, it made a whole lot of sense. But at the end of last season, was he someone that you were thinking, we could bring him back and maybe build around him and whatever package we get from whatever team gets AD? Or are you ready to have him on a different team?
I'd say more so towards letting him walk. It always kind of depends on, if the price is right. I don't think him at $18 million for the first year, it was 3 years. I think he signed with the third year being partially guaranteed. I don't think that's horrible. You can kind of get out of that pretty quickly if you need to, and there's worse players you could sign for $18 million. But with this team kind of entering a rebuilding year, it's just not the type of guy you wanted on the roster. He wants the ball in his hand, and if you're trying to integrate a bunch of new young rookies or young talent on there, they're not going to get the ball as much with him. He's a bit of a black hole at times, and you've got to wonder how that maybe affects teammates when he's the one that's just going to go that hero ISO ball. And I think that's what kind of soured a lot of big basketball fans here in New Orleans on him, just that's not the style you kind of want to play, at least here in New Orleans. You know, it works for some teams like the Rockets, but I think those are kind of fewer and far between right now. So it's kind of going to be a situation where, yeah, you know, you get him for maybe $15 million. Cool. We can bring him back and handle with it on that. But, you know, getting closer to 20, I think that was going to kind of be the breaking point. And then, you know, with the Zion stuff, it was pretty clear that he just didn't have a place on this team this coming year.
Right, and I guess you hinted at a lot of elements of this question, but this was a stat I've referenced a ton this offseason. I probably should have looked it up pre-show to make sure I'm getting it exactly right. But it was something along the lines of Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday were about 4 points better per 100 possessions in the aggregate without Randall on the floor than when they played with him. And obviously that would seem to imply, given how many minutes that trio played together, that Randall was something of a net negative. But I guess as the primary focus of an offense, do you think he has more utility since, as you mentioned, that is so his game? Or do you think that just will make his inefficiencies all the more glaring?
No, you know, I think you can make it work, particularly, you know, it's like any big man that can drive for the perimeter and get you a bucket. The more shooters you put around him, the easier it's going to be for those guys to work. And they're not going to just drive and then try and shoot over, you know, a double or a triple team, leading to an inefficient shot and likely a miss. So if you can kind of build the right roster around him, certainly it could work. You know, he's almost in a way a little bit kind of Anthony Davis light. And that's the type of roster that the Pelicans should have tried to put around Anthony Davis for a couple of years before we got to the point where we, you know, had him wearing T-shirts into the locker room and things, enforcing his way out. So it can be done. Again, you know, I don't think as the best player on a team, he's going to lead you to a championship. But if you're in a transitionary period, which the Knicks kind of are, in my opinion, I think, you know, again, you could do worse. He's going to probably win you a couple games, whether that's good or bad kind of depends on the team makeup and situation. But, you know, I don't want to call him a bad player. It's just kind of that inefficient guy that if he cuts down on some of that and even just takes a slight step defensively, he's a good NBA player, I think.
He was a guy who averaged 3 assists per game last year, and he's always been regarded as a pretty good passer while simultaneously being something of a ball stopper, which I guess on the surface is a little bit of an oxymoron, but when you just think of him as someone who needs the ball a lot and is willing to pass, it kind of does make sense. Do you feel like he's the type of player, because the Knicks would even tend to do this with Noah Vonleh, who was sort of a lesser version of him last year, where he can get the rebound and then just sort of create offense either in transition or semi-transition, or is that a little bit too ambitious for him as a creator at this point?
No, actually, I think that's kind of where he works the best, to be honest. He's a very smart player, kind of see it, and I think you see him make the right passes in transition. If he grabs that defensive board and starts to push up in the fast break and someone's freaking out, he'll get them the ball and he can make those passes in that transition and semi-transition type of style of play. And I think he does well there. Again, there's a very good basketball player in him somewhere. And it's one that maybe does have a bit of like a point forward type to him too. And you saw this with DeMarcus Cousins in New Orleans, where he was averaging over 4 assists per game. And Julius Randle had those assist numbers come up. You just got to kind of put him in the right spots. You can also run big, big pick and rolls with him if you need to as well, where he's the ball handler in that. And he can kind of make the right pass. You don't want to be doing that all the time with him. But he makes the right reads and can get the ball where it needs to be. But there's times, though, he just decides he's going to drive and then he's going to either have a turnover or force up a bad shot, and it's going to make you hate him on that possession.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems like I love what you said, that there's a good basketball player in there somewhere, because it just sort of feels like if he emphasizes the right parts of his game, he could be really good and really efficient. And I'm interested in the big-to-big pick-and-roll opportunities, because I feel like Mitchell Robinson can do, at least as far as a rim roller, pretty decent Anthony Davis impersonation. To me, the biggest question about Randall at this point is how real his three-point shooting was last year. Obviously, before last season, he'd never shot better than 30% from three. His final year with the Lakers, he was all the way down to 22%. Was it sort of a Rajon Rondo, we're going to leave you wide open and see how many you can make? Or do you think he credibly became a much better shooter last year, and that's something that's sustainable and could even gain the respect of defenses over time?
You know, somewhere in between. I know that's not like the fun answer on this.
No, but it's probably right. Yeah.
It's somewhere in between. Like, look, if you're knocking down 34% of your shots from deep, you're an okay shooter at the very least, even if you are left wide open. And I saw that for a year with Rajon Rondo, and I'm curious to see how this is going to go with Lonzo Ball here this year, where it's kind of that. They just don't believe in it, so they're going to leave you open and at least make them pay when you're doing that. You know, his volume wasn't too high, but it wasn't small either. He was taking close to 3 threes a game. That's not, you know, minuscule in an insignificant sample size where it's completely just an error and a fluke here. So I think he can keep that going. There's games where he jacks up, though, 5 or more, and you certainly don't want him doing that. And so it's kind of just finding the right balance. Yes, take those when they're open, maybe take them in transition if you think you have the shot, but there's oftentimes going to be a better way for him to try and score, or a better way for the offense to try and score, and maybe a three-point look for him ripping it early in the shot clock in half-court offense isn't the way to go, and that's something he can kind of fall in love doing, where that's when you kind of see maybe the lazy side of him, which we've seen from bigs, which can derail their careers.
Absolutely. And I don't know, to me that's so interesting, because if he, and I don't know if this is ever feasible, but if he ever really became like a 37% three-point shooter, I mean, I think you have one of the, I mean, better offensive players in the league sounds strong, but he genuinely is a weapon at that point. And then I guess flipping to the other end of the floor, how destructive was he as a defender last year? I know you mentioned earlier a difference between his individual defense and his team defense, but the Knicks are almost trying to replicate the Pelicans formula of pairing him with an elite rim protector at the center spot. Obviously for New Orleans, it's Anthony Davis. For the Knicks, it's Mitchell Robinson. Did that sort of cover up for his deficiencies, or is that just sort of impossible to do with him?
No, it certainly helps. I think, you know, it's tough to read into maybe too much of what we saw from this Pelicans team last year, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, when you had Anthony Davis more or less checked out like the entire year, particularly on that side. AD had been, you know, a defensive player of the year candidate very strongly the year before, and just did not seem to care on that side of the ball this year, which is just going to make everyone look worse defensively. You know, he gets blown by, he doesn't make the right reads at time, and he's not really sliding over and playing that help defense that oftentimes he needs to do, and that can really create a lot of issues. But of course, getting someone behind him, forcing him maybe a little bit more on an island where he has the athleticism and the strength to usually keep up with most people. He can switch a little bit too, though he's not particularly great at that, in my opinion. But, you know, it's one of those things where you just got to kind of wait and see, because I just don't put much stock into almost anything we saw defensively for the Pels last year.
And maybe this is the wrong question, because I think it's so interesting. There are a ton of Knicks fans who think he can be an all-star this year, and I don't think that's totally out of the question given the role that he's going to play and the relative weakness of the Eastern Conference. But I guess what I wonder about him long-term, and maybe this won't be on the Knicks, because who knows if the Knicks will field a good team in the next 3 years, but do you see him as a guy who will ever become a key contributor on, if not a finals contender, maybe the next tier of team, but like a 50-plus win team? Or is he just destined to be a good stats, bad team type of guy?
You know, I think part of that just ends up where he goes and how they're building, obviously. But no, like we've been talking about, I'm not trying to sound so negative on him, and I hope I'm not coming off that way. But like you said, he has the makings of a very good offensive player, and his game is surprisingly well-rounded for a big. There, you got to wonder a little bit about kind of the ball hogginess and the black hole on offense at times, the energy and effort. But if those things get figured out, which sometimes they really can be, this is a guy who can be very, very good. You don't want him, again, being your main guy, being the number one option on that. I don't see a 50-win team with this guy taking maybe 24 shots per game, something like that. But as the second guy on one of those teams, absolutely. If you can get someone or a team that kind of masks the defensive issues there, he's going to be able to score for you, and he's going to be able to do a lot of the things you want to do, particularly if a team wants to get out and play very fast and run in transition. He can do that. He's a great player to have in a situation like that.
Yeah, it's so interesting when you have those conversations on guys, because, I mean, ultimately, I mean, it's exactly what you said. It comes down, when I ask, can he be a winning player, like, all right, what role is he going to play? If he's going to be a sixth man, like, obviously, he could be a winning player. And I guess it comes down to, can he be that guy while still being the best version of himself and the most utilized version of himself? And that's ultimately what I'm interested to watch next season. All right, we'll take a quick break on Locked On Knicks. Come back, talk about the other New Orleans Pelican to join the Knicks. Alfred Payton, that next on Locked On Knicks.
Hey, are you in the New York area and looking to promote your business to a young, predominantly male demographic?
Then Locked On Knicks is the podcast for you. 80% of our listeners fall between the ages of 18 and 44, and 98% of those listeners are male. As the top Knicks podcast on the market, we offer a unique opportunity to engage with basketball fans in the city.
If interested in an ad spot or live read, email lockedonknicks@gmail.com for more information on pricing and availability. Our rates are very affordable compared to radio and offer a chance to reach an audience on an ever-growing platform.
Gavin Shaw here with Jake Madison, the host of Locked On Pelicans, one of the hosts of Locked On NBA. You can find him on Twitter at NolaJake. We just went over Julius Randle. I want to talk Elfrid Payton a little bit because to me it was a little mystifying that the Knicks signed him. I mean, just given that they already had Dennis Smith Jr. and Frank Ntilikina. And my thought was they were really going to want to – this was sort of the make or break year for both those guys, and they wanted to know – what they had in them, and instead they bring in Payton, who, I mean, obviously his whole career has never really been spectacular, has struggled with his jump shot, but what did you make of having him on the Pelicans? And it seemed like, I mean, at least based on my memory, correct me if I'm wrong on this, New Orleans played their best ball last year when he was healthy and he was the point guard.
Yeah, you know, they started off 4-0 for the first four games last year and looked like world beaters. And that was with him running the point guard spot. And then he got injured and they hit a bit of a slump. And, you know, it's tough to evaluate him. He was injured throughout most of last year, about half of last year, only playing in 42 games, kind of in and out of the lineup, had a broken finger. And I think he re-broke it at one point, too. And, you know, it's tough for a point guard like that to get into a groove. But overall, you know, he's all right. He's, you know, maybe a low-end starting point guard in the league. You can get by with him if you've got some other options out there. But he's the type of guy, due to his bad shooting at times, his lack of a reliable three-point shot, that, you know, he can crowd your spacing in the half court very quickly. Again, very good in transition, very good at making the right reads and getting out and running. He's got pretty good size, too, and is a very good rebounder for a point guard, grabbing over 5 boards last year. And so if you use him in the right ways to kind of mask some of the deficiencies he has, he's probably about neutral on defense. Not amazing, but certainly not a negative, I don't think. And so he can do a lot of things right. And if you remember at the end of last year, he had that streak where he was getting a bunch of triple-doubles in a row. I forget how many it was, but you know, part of that was due to no Anthony Davis. Someone's got to put up numbers on a bad Pelicans team. But still, he's still doing it. And it wasn't like other guys were beating him out for these roles for some of these plays. So I think it shows, you know, maybe as the third best starting point guard in the league, that's probably maybe where you'd rank him.
And I guess my biggest, I guess, specific question about him is, do you feel like he makes his teammates better? Because he's obviously a very strong passer, and he puts up numbers in that capacity. Clearly, as we just noted, New Orleans was a lot better with him on the floor last year, though that might have been just as much of a product of who the other options at point guard were. But I guess what I'm getting at is, does his vision and his passing ability and his unselfishness offset the fact that teams just don't really have to guard him from distance and can really pack the floor when he's on the court?
Yeah, I actually think he does make his teammates better. And I think, you know, again, depending on the makeup of the team, this is a situation, you know, he could thrive in the right situation. And part of it is because he's very good at attacking a defense and getting to the rim. Alvin Gentry liked to throw the stat out. So not last year, the year before that, basically he had like the highest field goal percentage at the rim of guards other than Russell Westbrook, which is saying something that it's Elfrid Payton who's doing that. So he's a guy who can drive and can attack and can break down a defense that way and then create other opportunities because he is such a good passer, make the right reads, make the right type of pass, and get the ball where it needs to go for some easy offense for his teammates. So I really kind of like him in that role. I'd love for him to have a three-point shot and just make it easier for everyone with some more spacing, but at least he tries to kind of make up for it in other ways, and you never feel like you're playing 4-on-5 on offense with him out there.
Okay, and this might be a little bit too in the weeds, but I had no idea he was that kind of finisher. What made him, and I mean, clearly that was 2 years ago, wasn't necessarily last year, where he only played 19 games in 2017, so that could have been a little bit of a sample size issue, but is he pretty creative around the basket? Sorry, go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, he was traded that year, so I think he played a total of over 60 the year.
Oh, gotcha.
Because he split time. I think he played 19 with Phoenix and then 44, I'm pulling up the numbers now, 44 with Orlando, so it wasn't that small of a sample size on it, but still, not 82 games.
Yeah, and what did make him so effective around the basket? Is he creative? Is he really good touch? Or?
Yeah, you know, I think part of it is his height and his strength. He's pretty good down there. You didn't see it a ton. And, you know, for a guy who can finish around the basket, get to the basket like that, he doesn't draw fouls, which can definitely be a detriment and isn't going to get to the free throw line a ton for you. But I think it's just more size and the strength and kind of the way he uses his body down low. Jrue Holiday is a pretty similar way, too, where they're able to kind of contort their body once they take that jump and the leap at the basket and kind of shield the ball away from getting it knocked out and able to finish with it. And, you know, once he starts doing that, you have teams that really do respect that a little bit, and that can kind of break it down a little bit more, too. You know, again, you need proper spacing around that, enough shooters, because otherwise they'll just hang off him and dare him to drive, and eventually you get a wall of guys, and you're not going to go anywhere with it. So, again, you know, with a lot of these guys, Elfrid Payton with Julius Randle as well, it's got to be the right situation. And, you know, one of the reasons he was maybe so effective with the Pelicans is because he was playing in transition a lot, where you don't need to worry about some of those defensive situations that you're going to run into.
Right. And I mean, he's still only 25 years old, and we've seen throughout relatively recent NBA history, there are point guards who develop a shot really late in their career. All of that, I guess, do you feel like there's still quite a bit of room for him to improve, or he sort of is what he is at this point?
You know, I think he really is what he is. We were really hoping for maybe a big jump in his shooting. He cut his hair so that, you know, when he elevated on that jump shot, it didn't like cover his eyes anymore with that little flop forward. He didn't really improve his shooting. So, you know, if it was going to be a year, it was probably going to be last year, where you get double teams on Anthony Davis, sometimes double teams on Julius Randle, that he was going to be open, and he just was not able to make teams pay with it. You know, he shot 31.4% from three last year. That's not going to get it done. And if he's ever going to take a jump, it's going to be the shooting. And like you said, maybe he finds that later in his career. He's still young. But we didn't see it last year, which was probably his best opportunity. So that's going to, you know, make me skeptical going forward.
Okay. All right. And I think that's enough Elfrid Payton talk, or at least as much as I can stomach for one podcast. So we will take a quick break. When we come back, I want to hear your thoughts on the Pelicans, Jake, because for my money, they're the most interesting team in the NBA next season. That next on Locked On Knicks. All right. We will come back in 3, 2, 1, third and final segment with Jake Madison. And Jake, this, I'm interested to hear from Knicks fans how intrigued they are from this. And I guess here's the angle that sort of connects the two. The Pelicans just pulled off the most rapid fire, complete rebuild I can remember. And there were some mitigating factors. Most teams don't have an Anthony Davis to trade away when they're about to start a rebuild. Most teams don't get to keep a Jrue Holiday level player when they're about to start a rebuild. And most teams don't fluke into the number one pick with insanely low odds in a draft that has the best prospect in maybe a decade. So there are a lot of really, really purely, you could argue, fortunate things happened for the Pelicans and David Griffin when he got that job. That being said, at least from my perspective, it's hard to argue he didn't maximize every single one of them. And I guess what would be your big picture takeaways from what David Griffin did this summer, and maybe how that could apply to the New York Knicks?
So the biggest thing to me that jumps out is you nailed a lot of them. Look, there was a lot of luck that went into this, and not necessarily, you know, some of the big game changing moments of, you know, getting Zion Williamson, having Anthony Davis to trade, the fact that Jrue Holiday is still under contract, you know, can restart a rebuild very quickly, jumpstart a rebuild very quickly. The biggest thing, though, you know, when I look at the Knicks as an outside thing, and look, I love to make fun of this team on the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA because they give us a lot of reason to, is ownership. Ownership had never really invested in this Pelicans team before and kind of just treated them as, you know, like that little stepchild to the Saints that they also own. But when the Anthony Davis situation happened, it seemed to wake them up, and Gail Benson, who's now the sole owner of the team, you know, didn't want to be thought of as the laughing stock anymore. David Griffin is an expensive guy you've got to bring in. And he said he knows that Gail Benson is committed to winning and investing in this team, because he said he wasn't going to take the job unless he agreed to this long, outrageous, very expensive list of demands. And well, he took the job, and she agreed to all of that, and they've been spending money left and right, whether it's on, you know, Aaron Nelson and hiring him away from the Phoenix Suns with the training staff, you know, to help keep people fresh, whether they just sunk about $10 million into the practice facility, which is only about 4 or 5 years old, and basically a complete renovation of a lot of that. They've hired, you know, a number of people for the front office that weren't coming cheap either. And that kind of investment in the infrastructure and laying the foundation, I think, is a real big thing. And that's what's going to lead to more sustainable success and maybe turn this team into a hopeful long-term contender than just having Zion Williamson. Because without the ownership buying in like that, you're going to probably run into a situation that we had with Anthony Davis, just replace his name with Zion Williamson. You don't have David Griffin here, who, as you said, didn't really maximize every opportunity that he was given, but it's ownership. And if you can get ownership to really pump in money like that, commit the way they need to commit, you know, that's something that the salary cap can't even out. And it's what do they say? Ownership's the biggest competitive advantage. Just look at the Clippers.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, I think a lot of Knicks fans are crying right now because, notably, I don't know. I'm sure you've heard our ownership situation isn't ideal. I don't need to litigate, James Dolan right now. It does bring up an interesting what if, because obviously I think, I can't remember if it was a season ago or I think it was 2 seasons ago now, the Knicks were pretty darn close to hiring David Griffin themselves and then last second balked when he demanded, full creative control essentially and final say on deals, which to me was insane, where James Dolan's like, oh, you know what? There might be a situation where I know a little bit better than you, Dave. I gotta be able to have final say here. And that still bums me out. Not that the Knicks front office has had some good moments over the last 2 years, most notably finding Robinson and Alonzo Trier in the draft, but I wonder what they could do with a guy like Griffin. And I'd be interested to see. This is a bet, the only way I can put it without Knicks fans flipping out, but I'd be interested to see what the Kristaps Porzingis situation had been if Griffin was the general manager and president. But that's sort of a dark road, so I don't want to go too far down it.
A big what if there.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I would just bum myself out and everyone listening. So instead of doing that, I want to get your thoughts on this year's team, because I think it's such an interesting roster. I thought they absolutely nailed the draft. Obviously, Nikhil Alexander Walker was such a pleasant surprise in summer league. Jackson Hayes looked like a complete freak. I'm a Lonzo optimist, so I'm honestly more excited about them adding Lonzo than I am Brandon Ingram, which I know is probably antithetical to most of the way the NBA fits. But I guess overall, how do you feel they did in building this team around Zion and a roster that's most conducive to his success?
You know, so the jury's still out on that a little bit. I certainly think they upgraded talent. They've brought in some really intriguing players who could fit with him. But you've seen him practice during training camp. Media day was on Monday, so we're a couple days in, 5 days in worth of practices now, that they are experimenting because they don't necessarily know what's going to work around Zion the most just yet. We have an idea that it's probably him and a bunch of shooters, given his style of game. Get him with a point guard who can handle the ball like Lonzo Ball. I'm very high on him coming into this year. But you know what? They don't really have the shooting around him, and I don't know if they're going to have the spacing in the half court that leads Zion to, you know, maybe enough success to be the rookie of the year. And that could be a very big issue, that they're going to get out and run a lot, and they want to be the fastest team in the league and play in transition a ton. But the team who leads the league in transition every year, it's about a quarter of their offense. You still got to find 75% of your offense through other means. I don't necessarily know if they have the firepower just yet to kind of go out and succeed in that way, which is kind of going to put them, for me, at least on the bubble in terms of the playoffs. And you're going to see this team trot out some really, really weird and probably bad lineups to start the year. And they're going to keep them out there way too long than we think they should, because they're just kind of trying to throw a bunch of mud at the wall and see what's going to stick and what's going to work around Zion Williamson. That all said, it's going to be really, really fun to watch this team this year. Jrue Holiday is one of the best two-way guards in the league. You know, we could wax poetic about Zion all day, probably. But you've got Lonzo Ball, who's very intriguing, whose form on his jumper looks good, at least in 4 or 5 days with training camp. You've got Brandon Ingram, who played very well when LeBron James was out last year. Can he carry some of that over and be a very tremendous wing player for New Orleans? Something I don't think this team has really ever had in the history of it. So there's a lot of intrigue in just waiting to see what works, what doesn't. And do they think they're maybe closer to contention than they originally planned and maybe shake things up at the deadline and ship out some of these guys, bring some new ones in? And then don't forget about a guy like Derek Favors that they added from the Utah Jazz, who I think is a very good complement next to Zion, being that rim protector down low, letting him play his more natural position of power forward and seeing what he can do, or what both those guys can do together defensively. So a lot of questions. I really worry about the lack of shooting, maybe kind of strangling the offense in the half court a little bit, but you know, it's kind of year zero, year one, so I don't think anyone's too worried about it, but that's certainly something they've got to figure out long term for Zion Williamson.
Yeah, it's such a strange combination of a roster that on the surface looks very different in its construction than a lot of really good teams around the NBA, and yet in a weird way to me at least sort of makes sense. And there's just so much talent there that you just kind of get the feeling like halfway through the season maybe injuries will solve some of those rotation problems, but I kind of feel like they're going to figure it out. I guess all that being said, do you have playoff expectations for this team just given how ridiculously deep the West is, or do you think it's going to take them too long to sort of figure out their best lineups and at that point they're going to be too far out of it?
Yeah, I'm more on the latter of it. The West is just stupidly deep right now, where the majority of teams you could at least talk me into having a chance at the playoffs. And I think that puts the Pelicans firmly on the bubble for it. And given that they're going to kind of go through some growing pains early on, I think they're just going to kind of have to make a decision to maybe do a youth movement towards the second half of the year, maybe after the All-Star break, where you give more minutes to Jackson Hayes, to Nikhil Alexander-Walker, to some of these other guys that they really want to get a good, strong look at. That'll make them fade even further from playoff contention. But I think you're going to see a team that, like, no one really wants to play, that maybe plays spoiler towards the end of the year because you've got a bunch of young, hungry guys out there. It's just nice to see a team go out and compete and not have dudes who have mentally checked out, I think. And just that alone I'm looking forward to.
This might be – I mean, at least usually would be maybe an ill-informed question for a team that's so young, but do you think this could end up being one of the best three or four defenses in the NBA? Because I just look at the guys that they can throw out there together, Lonzo, Drew, Zion, and Derek. Like, I almost don't even care who the fifth guy is. That's such a strong nucleus defensively with so much length and athleticism. I'm really almost more intrigued to watch them on that end than on offense.
Yeah, I think they've said internally they're going to be disappointed with the team this year if they don't have a top 10 defense. Lonzo Ball and Drew Holiday might be the best defensive backcourt out there. You've seen Holiday guard positions 1 through 4, sometimes even the 5, and does a pretty good job. The Pelicans beat the Warriors. It might have been last year or the year before, because Drew Holiday basically shut down Kevin Durant or held him to 20 points, which you've got to consider a big victory there. And they've got now Lonzo, who can take over those point, and guard the point of attack a little bit easier, spare Holiday some of that wear and tear there. You know, I think Zion will struggle early on defensively. When you really watch his film, this is a dude who has just an uncanny instinct for the ball. I mean, we saw it in summer league when he just went for it and ripped it out of Knox's arms and then threw it up for the dunk. But he gambles a lot, and in college it worked, partially because, you know, the three-point line's a little bit further in, the spacing's not quite there, and I wonder if it's going to take him a little bit to get his instincts adjusted to the speed and the space in the NBA, which means he's going to gamble a lot, completely whiff on jumping into the passing lane, and he's going to give up a fast break dunk or just an easy layup that way. But once he gets that down, this defense should really come together. Derek Favors, I think, is a pretty underrated player. His numbers without Rudy Gobert last year look really, really good. He gets to play that more natural position for him at center, be that rim protector, which can let Zion kind of wreck havoc, be that free safety on defense. They're going to be fun to watch and just annoying as all get up to play next year for opponents.
All right, one rapid fire one before sending you off, just because I looked at the roster and had no idea. Who's going to lead the Pelicans in scoring next season?
It's probably going to be Drew Holiday is what I would have to guess. I think that the second closest would probably be Brandon Ingram, who's going to be the number two guy. You know, AD, I don't think put up even 13-8 or 13-9 in his rookie year. You know, I think he was actually a better prospect coming into the NBA than Zion. I think Zion long term maybe has higher, a higher ceiling, but in terms of NBA readiness, I think AD was a step ahead of him. which means I'm kind of trying to temper expectations, maybe because I have such high ones for him. I need to knock him down myself, but I think it's going to be Drew. We've seen him be the number one guy. If you go back to the Portland Trailblazer series 2 years ago where they swept him in the first round as the lower seed, I think in the closeout game, he had 44 points. He had another 30 plus point game in that series as well. When he needs to be the man, he's proven he can do it. Now he finally gets to be the man on a nightly basis to be the leading guy in shots. I'm going to be very curious to see what he does on offense and have very high hopes for him.
All right. That was Jake Madison with Locked On Pelicans. Jake, before I send you out, I know you also host Locked On NBA. Anything else you want to mention or anything else you want to plug?
Yeah, so host of Locked On NBA on Wednesdays with John Krause of Locked On Celtics. This Saturday, I don't know when people are listening to this, when it's going to be airing. The Pelicans have an open practice at the Smoothie King Center. I'm actually going to be working for the Pelicans on Saturday and doing the commentary for the open practice. So if you want to tune in and get a first look at this team, go to pelicans.com or any of their social media, and you'll hear me on the live stream of it all.
Oh, wow. That's, you know, as someone whose lifelong goal is to be part of an NBA broadcast, that is genuinely awesome, Jake. I might tune in. I'll see what time it is. All right. Thank you so much, Jake. Really appreciate having you on. Everyone go check him out. Locked On NBA, Locked On Pelicans, if you have the same interest in them that I do. And, yeah, really enjoyed it.